Welcome to Portal to Ascension Radio. Together we will embark on a journey of awakening and exploration. I'm your host and the founder of Portal to Ascension, Neil Gore. Since 2008, we have been dedicated to providing a stream of awareness on a range of empowering and consciousness-raising topics. Through our events, webinars, conferences, retreats, and workshops, we bring together a community of researchers, spiritualists, archaeologists, consciousness explorers, and other experts who share their knowledge and insights. Our platform serves as a resource for discovering the ancient origins of humanity, unraveling the truth of the extraterrestrial presence, holistic wellness, exposing hidden truths, and expanding our awareness beyond the third dimension. On our YouTube channel, you will find full-length presentations and interviews that dive deeper into all you experience on this podcast. Search for Portal to Ascension on YouTube. On Portal to Ascension Radio, we feature captivating discussions, interviews, and presentations. Our guests are all featured on our website, portaltoascension.org, where you can sign up to receive free access to hundreds of presentations covering that diverse awareness we explore. Portal to Ascension Radio is here to guide you on this extraordinary quest as we shift into the next octave of existence. We appreciate and love you. Let's get into today's discussion.
Hello, everybody. My name is Senka Caro from LightNet, and today we are doing another episode of the Unlimited series where we interview people who have unlimited minds and unlimited lives. Daniel Rekchan is one of those people. He is incredible. In addition to raising two young boys, Jonah and Gabriel, in the middle of beautiful lands in Canada, he is a complete and total scholar. He has merged his love of computers with his love of ETs, and he has produced incredible research in this regard. So he is a quantum hypnosis practitioner, and he's also helps people regress themselves back to their ET contact, back to their UFO contact. And he's learned many, many things, some of which he's written about in his two books, both of which we're going to be talking about today, which is Missing Time and Sacred Geometry Markings that are left after contact on bodies. So he's got an incredible mind. He's one of the first people that is studying a PhD in UFO. It's not exactly called that. It's anomalous studies. And we'll let him talk more about that. He's also been the engineer behind LightNet and creating our collective intelligence search engine. So welcome, Daniel. You have quite a career because I haven't even finished talking about everything. For example, you're also the founder of Dreamwell. It's an app on dreaming, and he's an incredible expert on dream work, and is going to be doing work with shamanistic dreaming and how to do dream circles in our workshop in 2 weeks. So welcome, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
Has arrived. Yeah, so this is so great. So you were just mentioning on the pre-call that you came out with your new book recently. Tell us more about it.
So when I was writing the book Missing Time Found, I completed the draft, and that was through a series of video kind of presentations about regression hypnosis, how it's very dreamlike. Can we not use it as historic testimony? I had all these sort of scholarly approach to it. And then I finished the last chapter and I went, oh, thank God, I finished the last chapter. I went to bed the next day. I was like, I'm going to celebrate. I don't have to do any more work on this draft. I'm going to take a sauna. And I was in the sauna and I looked down on my leg and I saw this regular pattern of dots, this geometric pattern of dots. And I went, oh my God, this is it. This is a body mark. I did a CE5 invitation, actually, a human initiated contact experience invitation to the mark makers of the red grid mark phenomena, which is a fascinating phenomena, has about 3,000 or more experiencers in a Facebook group that have these like recurrent red grid marks. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get to the bottom of that by going to do a CE5 invitation. They did not give me a red grid mark, but there was a regular geometric pattern associated with that. And I went, this is so meaningful. This is a body mark, like an abduction mark. Took photos of it, videos of it. I looked for answers about it. And then it was like, I can't find any answers. And then so I waited basically 6 months to the day. So it was summer solstice, I experienced the body mark, finished the book draft. Then 6 months to the day on the winter solstice, a series of dreams happened where NHIs, this collective, visited me and said, we hear you want to help the world get better. We think you can help the world get better by working with us. Now you just have to listen to exactly what we say. And I said, okay, I'll try that. And so I thought, okay, they are telling me I need to do more Enochian magic. I need to channel more. I need to meditate more. I need to be better, better, better. And I was like, okay, I'm totally going to do that. But then I was like, I'll take a break and just watch this Zen video about sacred geometry. And I had a great time doing that. I went to bed the next night and they said, thank God you finally listened to what we had to say. You approach sacred geometry. They didn't care about any of that stuff around being better, a better meditator or whatever. They were like, you did what we asked you to do finally for the first time in your life. Thank God. Keep doing that for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You'll be good to go. So they basically sent me a bunch of dreams about sacred geometry. I have those drawings. And then they said, okay, look at body marks, look at crop circles, look at UFO sightings. And now you're ready to look at your own body mark. And I went, oh my God, there's geometry in here. It's communicative, it's meaningful. And so I had to just sort of get into that, do more with that. And that's what really produced the book, the second book, Galathog the Gray's Field Guide to Anomalous Geometry. And it collects about several dozen marks, abduction marks from around the internet, including my own, presents an analysis of them, collects the data. It's the only repository of this data I could find. And I scanned from the 1980s forward. And so that's really how it came about. And it's really around tuning into one's own experience of geometry when working with these things. So that's a long answer, but thanks for opening that door.
No, that's great. That's great. I just shared in the chat your different books and your Dreamwell and your YouTube for those watching on Portal to Ascension and New Realities. Welcome. And those are in there. So this is something that you've always, in everything I've ever seen you do, focused on, is say, if you remember your dreams and you have ET contact, they are suggesting you do something. And if you never do it, if you never like react and respond, they're not taking the time to do the contact again and again and again. So can you talk about that in your own life and when you first started getting messages that you felt were extraterrestrial? I know you were listening to different apps on your, you know, and meditating and taking walks, and you were getting some experience coming through. What happened with you?
Oh yeah. So I've been an experiencer all my life, and it's sort of like making sense of it as I go along. So there's different experiences that I look at in different phases of my journey. The earliest memory I have of contact was when I was like 2 or 3 years old. And I remember looking out the window. I remember seeing this sort of light density thing approach the front door of my house. And I remember looking at it going like, what is that? What is that? That must be the Easter Bunny, since it's nothing I ever saw before. And it's supernatural in nature. And it sort of said, if that's agreeable to you, I am the Easter Bunny. And it sort of caused me to see that. And the only thing I could make sense of it was the Easter Bunny at the time. I told my brother this. I told my mom this. I have even recently asked my brother, what do you think of that? And he said, you know what? I don't think you were lying. I think you actually saw that, because it's such a stupid lie. And you're not the type of person to lie. So it was really around seeing that thing come in and sort of co-create this perceptive experience about the Easter Bunny. And so from there, I've had a number of different other experiences. And as a teenager, I was in a lot of dreams. In my 20s, it was out of body experiences. There were interactions with entities in my dreams primarily, or through sort of like shamanistic or mediumistic modes of perception. They were there. They were assisting the experience. I didn't know who they were for a really long time. I still might not exactly know who they are, but they would sort of present and assist these experiences. And so then really when it was right around the time we met, about 6 months before then, I started really thinking, what am I doing with my life? Don't I really want to get into hypnosis? I really did want to. I got training in that like 5 years previously. So I thought, you know, I have to really open myself up to that in a much deeper way. And from that moment forward, where I said, you know, I'm opening up, I said a prayer to be of service to others in alignment with the principle of non-harm for the highest good of all, in alignment with my destiny and desire. And then they started talking to me really strong. I mean, they literally, I said a prayer and it said, Google CE5 Revelstoke and follow what's there. And I did. And it was my buddy, who is my first missing time client, who has the most incredible documented missing time story I've ever encountered. His name's Sam Berg. He was with Rob Freeman, who's been on the channel and talked about the experience, with Paula Harris down in Atacama Desert. She's in the video going, "Where's Dan? Where's Dan?" And so it was just so crazy that he was there in answer to my prayers, and I was an answer to his. And he told me to go to CE5 Canada Facebook group, and you posted that day, and we were connected in that way. And then, so that's ET. That's what I mean. ET, I say ET NHI now because UFOs are now UAPs, ETs are now NHIs. So that's how it works together. And it's really about taking the action, and they'll guide you. Yeah. And you're muted, Zinka.
And it's also about finding your purpose. Now we're doing a lot about this now. So you literally was like, this is my purpose. I know my purpose. I'm making a prayer. Show me the next step. Where is it? And I loved what you just said about like your dream was this other guy's dream. He's like, oh, I found you. You know, I need to do this regression. You're like, I want to do regressions. It's like so hilarious. I love that so much. I love that so much. I want to talk about missing time and I want to get back to the body marks. But since we're in the midst of both right now, let's talk about missing time, because you know, a lot of people who have experiences, and we experienced missing time the other night when we drove back from the CE5. It was 10:15 when we left and 10:44 when we got back. And there's no possible way. It took us that long to get home. We're just like, I was nauseous for 2 days this week. Like, I was at this thing, you know, Peter put this on me at the Sedona consciousness retreat, ascension retreat. And all of a sudden I'm in his pyramid. I don't know what happened, but this is so interesting because ETs have the ability to pause time and then expand time and let you experience some stuff and place you back into approximately where you were. I mean, what's your theory on that? Is it that they let you know that you had some missing time, or they're not that good at the technology?
Yeah, I think that I think it's actually like a natural technology that's so deeply embedded in our world that it's like somehow fundamental. They're accessing that. They are not making mistakes in terms of placing people back. That's my personal hypothesis. A couple of prevalence rates I want to talk about. Half of experiencers report missing time. This is a strong indicator of in the 1990s, they did a series of polls called the unusual events survey. That was used to kind of justify alien abduction notions. And so basically it's like 1 in 8 people in Americans have experienced missing time. This isn't about alien abductions or ETs, just in general, they have. Same thing, 1 in 12 people, according to that survey, have had body marks, not abduction body marks, just like unexplained body marks. And so in that way, right. And there's other prevalence rates. Like if we look to the free survey, right, like the body marks show up. The thing around missing time is interesting because it is so associated sometimes with these physical events, like you're talking about this time dilation effect. I think there's many phenomena happening. The one I'm particularly interested in is the the missing time that happens associated with an extraterrestrial encounter intuition. So I'm saying, I'm not sure what's happening. We don't know. As a researcher, I can't go, okay, this is what happened in that missing time event. I go, let's explore these intuitions that are present. So we see that people go, I don't know what happened for this period of an hour, a day, multiple days. And then when they start to look into it, depending on how they look into it, they start to recover what seemed like memories, right? And so these are very, I say as a dream researcher and as an experiencer, these things are dreamlike in the way that they appear into our consciousness and we reintegrate them into our consciousness. So that's one of the reasons why I talk a lot about dream shamanism, is because dream shamanism is one of the only frameworks in the world. I mean, it's common throughout many cultures, but in our culture, we go, dreams are unreal, dreams are meaningless, we don't need to pay attention to them. But actually, dream shamanism, which is a universal kind of capacity of humanity, says, no, dreams are real. You interact with real entities, you go on real voyages at night, and all of these things require interpretation. There's big dreams and little dreams and all sorts of things. So what is happening to me, my fundamental hypothesis is that the world we're living in now, this waking phase world, is dreamlike in and of itself. And these time dilation events, the missing time events, the encounters with these extraordinary beings reveal to us that we're living in something like a dream, because those are all the exact qualities that dream scientists have observed exist in REM dreams. So when I look through the characteristics of bizarreness in REM dreams and compared it with high strangeness, there's almost a one-to-one correspondence between the two. And so I go, it looks like the human-initiated contact event is something like remembering we're in a dream and reaching out to say, I need wisdom from the creators of this dream. And these dream characters come in. This is what happens in lucid dreams. Dream characters come in and give you an experience. Same thing is happening with a human initiated contact experience. And so we get all this weird stuff that seems like weird technology or accidents or stuff like that. Like the clothes on backwards, or like in a different room. People have all these amazing things that they go, how is it even possible? It must have involved teleportation or whatever. But that is really sort of clues that the reality we're in is less solid than we have been led to believe, and that we have the capacity and the practice of interacting with them from our own dreams. And that connection between the dreaming experience and this encounter experience is really obvious to me once I realized that the primary example of missing time is unremembered dreaming, not alien abduction. And that was like the big aha moment for me. I was like, okay, it's not alien abduction. Everybody's experiencing missing time at night. Everyone's having fantastic encounters with extraterrestrials or fantastic beings. Everyone's having these sort of, the old abduction researchers called them theophanies, or like communications of divine wisdom or prophecy. That's what happens on the UFO ships in abductions. That's happening at night in dreams every night. And so I say that is our best example of missing time. If we understood how to recollect our own dreams, we would understand then how to recollect these missing time events.
Cool.
Yeah. And you're on mute again.
So that's really fascinating, because Adam Kupal on our team is exactly focused on this. He's saying in his waking induced lucid dreaming, where we basically started lucid dreaming from a waking state in a group of people, so we would remember it better. We started this project called Lucid Living, and we just reserved the YouTube channel yesterday. He did. And this idea that this could be a dream, and if it is, let's test its lucidity. And so in the lucid dreaming course, we would do things like bloom ridiculous objects into reality that couldn't possibly exist. I mean, not couldn't possibly, but we would bloom like purple cars and things like that, and blue bears and $100 bills, and they would show up in our reality. And we're thinking, wow, this is some sort of proof on the other side that this could be the dream. And we talk about, you know, when we go to bed at night, we are in agreement that everything in my mind and everything in your mind is part of your subconscious mind playing itself out, right? You're playing all the, you're creating and playing all the characters. That doesn't seem like a stretch because it's your dream, right? But that's the conclusion I'm coming to about this reality that we're living in right now. Somehow we're inextricably connected to every single person in our life in a way that's unbreakable, that's not connectable. So I think you're really onto this. And I ask everybody listening, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, Zenka, how was your dream today? Just like you would say to someone when they're waking up, how was your dream today? And oftentimes I have good life days, but not so good dreams at night. So this is like, how do we create good dreams in our waking life? And what do you think about that, Daniel? Like, so if you're saying that, of course we can contact aliens because it's a dream and because they exist in there, how do we have better waking life dreams in life? Like, how do we lucid live? How do we calm our subconscious mind from having negative experiences?
Yeah, I would answer that question from the perspective of dream work. And I would say it's applicable to living, it's applicable to dreaming in general, it's applicable to extraordinary dream states and alien abduction experiences. And that's one of the things that I have a really strong mission about, is converting this notion of negative abduction into something more empowering. That's really, I think, what needs to happen in the mainstream, is sort of reducing that fear around that. It's a little bit of an aside to say, this one approach is kind of universally available for all of those phenomena. And that's for me, I look at attitudes, intention, and mindfulness. And this is just for me, a simple way of relating to how to work with dreams. So, and this comes from dream studies, right? I look through the last like three decades of dream literature, and I said, what's effective here? And this in part came from my work with the Dreamwell app. So I'm the chief dream officer of Dreamwell. And so that means my responsibility is to base its dreaming recommendations on research, on solid practices. And so I look through that literature and I go, what actually affects dreams? What actually impacts people's dreaming qualities? And I don't really care about if people are having great dreams. I actually care if people are living great lives. So that has to come back from the dream to the waking world. And I came up with a simple formula: intentions, attitudes, and mindfulness. Mindfulness helps us step back, and mindfulness is just defined as being present moment to moment without judgment. That's from Kabat-Zinn. It's a famous definition of it. And so as we practice mindfulness, we know that like lucidity increases, your capacity to gain insight and then from there, that helps you gain insight into the nature of reality. People practice lucid dreaming with psychotic people, and that helps them understand what is real and what is psychotic. So that's mindfulness. Then attitudes really impact how you dream. If you don't believe that your dreams are meaningful, you likely will not have a meaningful dream frequently. I say, you better watch out because they'll come after you. Like there's always this sense of the dream world wants you to engage with it. So if you ignore it too long, it'll come bite you basically. But that's really around attitudes. You got to believe they're meaningful. You got to believe that you can be lucid in dreams. You have to believe in these things. There's really good reason to believe those things. And I often will recommend people reading through other people's dream experiences, particularly cross-culturally. So anyone listening to this is probably from a Western modern culture, and we're terrible at dreaming. We just have it beaten out of us from so many different angles. But the good news is it takes about 2 minutes to get back into it, and that building that trust, that cycle of like I'll take action on my dreams. So it's mindfulness, attitudes, that's working with how you think about it, and then intention. So that's really guiding you. You can say, I want to remember my dreams. I want to have a dream about this, that, the other thing. It's a really famous thing in dream work is to incubate a dream to solve a problem. And that's probably one of the most fundamental bits of magic that the Western world has experienced. They go, I want to have a dream that heals me or gives me a technology or something like that. And we have so many records of healings and precognitive visions and technological creativity. So yeah, it's, I would apply that intention, mindfulness, and attitudes to waking life anywhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the same thing, I mean, that's how we teach people how to do magic, is your intent, you know, is set your intention, have an open mind, a good attitude, and then also like, you know, let go like of the results, which is the mindfulness, is there's no judgment on you as to result, there's no judgment. So that's interesting. That's very interesting. And, you know, Dean Radin, the chief scientist of ION, said, if I get my formula in the dream, I know that I have the right formula. So there's something about, you know, the scientists using it, and that we can too. And I highly recommend. I mean, I know a friend who's a you know, a grade school teacher, and every morning she starts with what did you guys dream? So it's just a matter of, and I know you advocate that too, asking each other, having conversations about it. So I just put the Dreamwell app in the chat too, and it's a way to record your dreams. I used to not being able to remember any of my dreams at all. I would have to make it up if I was like in a situation. And now with your app and all the stuff you've taught me, I remember every single dream, every single night. It's just so cool. So it's really interesting. So let's get back to, you know, you are in an interesting position of collective intelligence because you've hypnotized so many people and talked to them about their abduction experiences and their missing time and their, you know, and their marks and things like that. So what is the thing that you want the audience today to take away from when you talk about these marks and we talk about these abduction experiences? What fascinates you, and what about the collaboration that we're in the midst of right now?
Yeah, a primary mission I have once I really dived into it. When I started doing this work, I really dived into working with missing time experiencers, people with body marks. I've done dozens of sessions explicitly on missing time and abduction experiences. I've researched or spoken with dozens of experiencers of body marks and things like that. The message that I have is that the alien abduction notion and the notion that these body marks may be evidence of a medical accident from extraterrestrial doctors who have stolen bodies is not a solid hypothesis. And there's reasons why I say this. I analyzed all of the evidence from 1985 onwards. I looked into the research. I've read these books, and I say, this is actually not solid. It's not solid enough to build our worldview on, is what I'm saying. And I'm saying there's something very, very meaningful happening in these abduction encounters and the body marks and the in the regression hypnosis experience, but it's not solid enough for anyone to build their worldview on. And I say this because when I grew up in the 1990s, that was the height of the alien abduction panic. And it just made me pee my pants in terror, basically. Every night I went to bed and I was having these extraordinary contact experiences or dreams. And I thought it was either a demon or aliens were abducting me. And I could not make sense of it. And even recently, when I approached these experiences, I had some level of fear. That inner child that watched a lot of X-Files was just terrified of all of these things. And I said, you know what? Just like in a dream nightmare where there's a monstrous creature, you have the choice of either running away and continuing that fear nightmare or embodying mindfulness and being with that fear, turning towards that nightmare monster and saying, what wisdom do you have? And so I did the same thing with abduction research. I did the same thing with body mark research. I dived in and I said, what wisdom do you have? And there was a lot of wisdom that came through. And primarily it's that everyone has a sort of universal capacity to be empowered, to navigate their own relationships with these beings, that we don't need to bring in the notion of being victims or something like that. That there is this dynamic that is challenging between here and the other side, but it is mediated in the same way that nightmares are mediated. So in the same way, I'm not terrified of my nightmares because I understand there's underlying wisdom there and connection, and it's just my dreaming mind. So too, I'm approaching this with a sense of mysticism. Those little grays from who knows where that might make an accident, the abduction thing, and leave the body marks, those are actually some way connected to me through this universal mind thing. And therefore, I don't have to be as afraid of it as something other invading my space and taking my body. That's a big message. That's the one on my heart to share right now. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I always say, you know, we have a lot of power in being physical beings in a physical world. You get to call the shots and no one can really take you over. So but you don't know that, like, and they don't, you know, they may know that, but they don't want to let you know that. So it's up to us to tell each other, hey, wait a minute, you've got the upper hand, you're lighter, you know, you're of higher, I don't know. It's just like the mathematics of it is that if we know how to access our, you know, heroism, not our victim mentality, we can step in and say, hey, you know, step back. Don't do this or get curious, right? It's like that curiosity. That's really interesting. Now, sovereignty, as Pauline says. Yeah. So I want to invite everybody that's listening on New Realities and Portal to Ascension to visit lightnet.org/unlimited. And this will bring you back into the Zoom room. And I'd also like to see if Rosalind, Bethley, Barbara, Edna, Mr. Bailey, if you guys have questions, now's the time to ask. There's a reaction button at the bottom with a little smiley face, and there you can raise your hand. I'll turn on your camera. I'll bring you down to ask Daniel questions. Now, he is a scholar, so he's very much of an expert in many, many things. Dreaming, missing time, sacred geometry, radio research, we've done a lot. And also, you know, this whole contact phenomenon and this whole idea of, you know, you're getting your PhD in integral studies. Tell us a little more about that. I mean, it's the very first one in the world, right?
Yeah, it's so this is at the California Institute for Human Sciences. It is in the integral noetic science department, and it is an anomalous studies concentration. The program's put together by Dr. Sean Esbjorn-Hargens, who was on LightNet, and that's where we got connected, actually. He came on and was like, "All right, I'm signed up. I'm doing it." The whole institute was recently accredited by WASC. That's WASC. That's an accreditation board. And that's really important. So there are going to be claims about first UFO program, first ET program arising in the world. But when you consider entering a program, look to see the level of accreditation associated with that. And this is why I jumped on it, because there's many places to study these things. And some places even claim to give like PhDs out and stuff like that. But unless it's accredited by one of these standard organizations, mainstream will not accept it. And the reason why I jumped on this mainstream acceptable thing is because we need more publicly defined knowledge about contact from within the academic orthodoxy in a way that that can communicate with these things. I presented my theories on dream contact to the International Association of the Study of Dreams last summer. So this is, I'm trying to bring it forward. Dr. Sean has been really wonderful in creating a space of integral-based inquiry into noetic science, basically. So we've got someone looking into crop circles. There's all sorts. It's like, I love it. I love the variety of people in the program. I love the program itself. I'm just jazzed up about it all the time. Yeah.
That's cool. That's great. That's great. Now you're going to be doing a workshop with us for our members, and looking up the exact title of this. So it's going to be Finding Missing Time with Dream Shamanism. So tell us a little bit more about what you're going to be going over in this.
Yeah, I will be covering this is going, for some people, it might be very simple experience, but it's going to be profound no matter what, because dreams are profound. That's the thing that, after all my experience with doing regressions and stuff like that, I realize I can just back up a little bit and let the dreams be the dreams. And really, if we open space where people talk about them, the magic happens. The specific goal with this workshop is to provide a framework of understanding for the participants about what regression hypnosis is and what regression hypnosis is not. And so there's a lot of controversy around that. There's a lot of science around it too. And I say that I'm presenting the argument in the book Missing Time Found that regression hypnosis is misidentified dream shamanism, in the same way that I say the unremembered dreaming is the primary precedent for the missing time event. I say that dream shamanism is the primary precedent for hypnosis or regression hypnosis, not memory retrieval per se. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the ethics and epistemology of dream work as defined by the International Association of the Study of Dreams, so that you know what you can say or not say ethically around your experiences. And then we're going to have an experience. So that will be approaching perhaps a missing time event that you've had, perhaps a dream experience you want to re-enter. And so we'll all do that together, sort of as a kind of group hypnosis experience. But really, by the end of it, you should really understand what hypnosis is, what it isn't, and how to apply dream shamanism. Everyone's a dream shamanism. If you've ever asked someone, everyone's a dream shaman. And if you've ever asked, what have you dreamt, and listened and felt empathetic and kind of took it seriously in whatever way is meaningful to you, that's dream shamanism. And that's pretty much it. So there's a couple techniques I'll invite participation with. But really, it should empower people to really be their natural, explorative, playful, intuitive selves relating to their own missing time experiences.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, we had this girl in one of the chats, Portals to Ascension, called Luna Ray. And she was like, oh my gosh, I went to work today and I clocked in at what did she say exactly? She says, I clocked in right at a certain time. And then all of a sudden, let's see, she says, it was 9/11 when I went to the restroom and I was gone for no more than 2 minutes. And I was at my best desk back again at 9:46. And she's like, this has been puzzling me all day. Mm. And here I see this thing come up on Portals to Ascension. So, and she also talked about having experiences where she was dreaming. She was outside of her body, looking at her body, kind of like a death experience, and seeing, you know, dogs and things like that there. So, I love that you're going to be teaching us how to re-enter dreams. So oftentimes we have a dream and we're thinking, how did it end? What's next? How is it going? And using your techniques, you can actually get back into it, which is amazing. So that's going to be really fun on the members workshop to really dive into that. So people are also talking about doing body scans, you know, in the chats on the other channels. And, you know, isn't it interesting that we have this dream world and then we have physical proof? It's kind of like the radios, like, wow, you know, we've got this other side, and how could they be showing up on our radio? So how could aliens be leaving these physical marks on our body? What do you think about that? How is that working? How is this crossover happening?
Good question. I'll respond to that, how the body marks are happening, in a couple different ways. The traditional notion is that there was some sort of physical event that happened. Now, looking into the actual where that hypothesis comes from, that comes from mostly like in the 1980s, a collection, a folkloric survey of the abduction tales to this point say, hey, this is a commonality, but nobody really studied it until Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, and their research around that is problematic. It just is. And so we don't actually know if they're caused by physical implements at all. But in the survey, in my research, I did a literature review of all sorts of anomalous body marks, and it was really gnarly to go through all the different medical databases and stuff like that, like of all the weird body marks out there. And there are some really beautiful parasites out there, and it's just like, oh my God. So there's many things happening. There's psychosomatic. So basically, I landed on a primary hypothesis, which is psychosomatic, meaning nobody's coming here to mark the body, but there's a real interaction in the dream world that's so impactful that a template of this geometry of these marks was applied to the experiencer, and that the experiencer's energy bodies in some way, shape, or form responded to that and created the mark. So that's the first response to that. This is the academic scholarly idea, because I was like, Dr. Sean, how do I study this? And he says, well, you got to be strategic. So start with a hypothesis that's grounded in literature, and that is really around like stigmata is understood to be something like a psychosomatic experience, even though some people understand it to be a kind of a spiritual gift. So at that point, we go, okay, I can work with that. I can work with something like stigmata and explore it. However, at the same time, I was like, my own personal experiences and looking into other experiences, I do think there is a sort of ball of light phenomena happening. And this is speculation. This isn't there. There's maybe half a dozen papers that could support this notion, as opposed to like dozens and dozens or hundreds that I usually like to, you know, kind of support ideas with. But this is the notion, like crop circles, right? So crop circles have documentation of these balls of light show up and geometry just appears, right? In the same way, we have accounts of balls of light showing up in abduction experiences or light figures or something like that, or people seeing orbs and then they discover body marks. And the other thing that I would say is the body marks that I really care about have the same exact pattern of geometry as flying UAP orbs. So it's more or less like one-to-one connection. Like if you take photos of the Phoenix lights or some of these other light orb phenomena and you make them black and white and print them out, and you take photographs of the body marks I've been studying, make them black and white and print them out, you can't tell the difference. They're the same geometries. And so I say there's something connected between the two. Now, the third hypothesis too is that these are anomalies in some way, shape, or form that are synchronistically meaningful, meaning you had a dream that somehow synchronistically you, I don't know, had a bed bug bite or whatever. And the physicality of that mark kind of underpins or resonates with the dream experience. In all of those cases, I go, wow, that's amazing. Even if it is just synchronicity, that's beautiful. So it's worth studying in that way.
And I actually happen to think that I think there are different dimensions, not just like the dream dimension, not the dream dimension, or the waking dream versus the other dream. I actually think that there are beings that are operating in another dimension and that they're starting to interplay with our dimension. And I mean, I've had people say like, okay, ETs are fixing my teeth. And then all of a sudden their teeth are fixed. And I'm starting to think like Peter's healing. I'm starting to think that he has an entire team of other dimensional people that are standing by doing all this miracle healing or doing, because I mean, my body felt so different. I couldn't explain it. And so I think more than my belief, I think that we may be starting to understand that there's some sort of interaction between another world and this world and some sort of a bleed over. And that's what we're doing with the apports right now. We're trying to figure out, can they pass things from one, you know, I don't know, but it's interesting how you're in this predicament, like you're saying, is like to push the you know, the academic stuff forward, there has to be precedence, and there is no precedence, and there is no, you know what I mean? So it's like, so you're, you know, you have to kind of inch it along by building upon all these theories and putting things out there and referencing little things that become bigger things that become bigger things, you know? So it's very interesting, and I applaud you so much for doing the work you're doing, because it has to come from all sides. It can't just come from Gaia and Lightnet and all these, you know, fringe things. By the way, I just want to put in a plug for the Enigma app. And I don't know if you've seen this, Daniel, but it's awesome. It's called Enigma, and it's for sightings, for UFO sightings. You can find people near you, and it's very open-minded. And it's very scientific. And it's, you know, we dreamed of doing something like this. They just knocked it out of the ballpark. It's very, very cool. So we have someone now. Anyone in here, members here, you know, raise your hand if you want on reactions, and I'll pull you into the broadcast. But we have Jennifer asking, she's had encounters with blue NIH in dreams and meditation. Does Daniel have any knowledge or experience with blue beings? Yes.
My personal experience with blue beings, and this is, again, personal experience. Everyone has a different flavor, and every person who is a practitioner, a hypnotist, has a different flavor. That's one of my fundamental messages, is like, I can say from my personal experience as an experiencer and as a hypnotist researcher working with other people, what I observe. But that set of observations is really, it shares as much about me as it does about the experiencers. And so I say that is important when we work with, like, looking into Dolores Cannon's work versus John Max versus Bud Hopkins. They will report different types of experiences because they're different people. And so my personal, and so this is a preamble to say, I love blue beings. I've interacted with several experiencers who have encountered blue beings, and they have just been delightful in my experience. In terms of more than any other color of being, the blue ones are sort of delightful. So that's my experience. I mean, and that may be in direct contradiction to the experiencer who questioned this is experience. And that's really something to just pay attention to.
Yeah. I've had good experience with blue beings, and often people say they see blue beings when they talk to me. So it's great. I wanted you to explain to the audience a little bit about quantum healing hypnosis that you learned and how it works, because this is like a deeper level of hypnosis that goes way back. Like, so you're doing hypnosis for past lives and all this crazy stuff. So can you talk about this? And then Pauline has some questions about her dreams, so we're going to get to that as well.
Wonderful. Yeah. So I'm certified in Beyond Quantum Healing, which comes from Candace Craw Goldman, who was a student of Dolores Cannon, who put forth the quantum healing hypnosis technique. And so that Candace has written a nice endorsement of the book Missing Time Found, and that's going to be integrated into the manuscript pretty soon. But I just wanted to say thank you, Candace, for that. She's got a great training modality there that is quicker than the QHHT, and at the time enabled you to do practice online in quantum ways. When she started, Dolores had sort of strong feelings about practicing online and things like that. I think that the quantum healing hypnosis technique has sort of shifted a bit, but this is all about, so Dolores Cannon is just like, I love her work. I think it's brilliant. I think it's more brilliant than the Hopkins, David Jacobs, or even John Mack. So I'll go on the record and say Dolores Cannon's work is more brilliant than John Mack. And I say this primarily because she wasn't limited by this sort of objective mainstream materialist viewpoint and worldview. She was willing to jump in and have conversations with the deeper aspects of higher self coming through. She was willing to go beyond the notion of abduction. And so she, I think, has made a beautiful impact in this world and has a beautiful legacy. And the way she worked was she said she would bring people down into the somnambulistic state of consciousness, which is was prevalent in terms of the language people used in that day about hypnosis. It's not so much prevalent now. So that's important to understand. Her notions about the scientific understanding of psychology, those now can be understood as mythologies, and they're still effective and meaningful today, but they don't necessarily correspond with what neuroscience is saying. That's fine, because it's her works as effective as judged by validity of people's experience. They're meaningful. They get knowledge about things. The difference between a normal hypnosis session and a quantum session is really how deep you go, how long it is, and what ends up happening. So oftentimes there will be several regression-like experiences, meaning you might go to a past life, you might go to a missing time experience, and then that shifts into a direct interaction with the higher self. And that's something like channeling. All of that session responds to a single intention. You might have an intention, I want to remember that missing time event, or I want to heal, or I want to activate my purpose. And those experiences then directly respond to that, and you're able to get insight from your higher self directly through this method.
Yeah, fascinating. I've always been so fascinated by her research and the ability to do this collective consciousness, that we're all kind of holding a piece of the puzzle. And when you can put people back into that state, she started to draw conclusions about the fact that even rocks are sentient, or what was happening in the world. But then, you know, she would be like, you know, your brain is going to, you know, turn into a pretzel, because she's like, in her later book, she's like, this gets so complicated. You know, the information that was coming through is really, really endearing. So it's really good to see everyone here today, Stone. Good to see you. So we have some comments here. I don't know if she wants us to be anonymous or not, but she's saying that, you know, she's getting radio contact and it's coming through, and then she's asking for the answers to come through the dreams, and it's not, because she's not remembering it. And she's feeling, you know, anxious that why isn't it coming through? And I have a little bit of a comments too about this, and would like to get your opinion, Daniel. But I mean, the thing is this, we are in uncharted territory. There's not so many books and literature about this. So it's not something you can look up in a book, right? And I think to a large extent, we're having to throw away books right now in general, because we're starting to prove things wrong. Like, oh, you can cure cancer with food, or, you know, or whatever. I mean, these things that we never thought we could do, we're doing. So in a sense, you know, you've got old news permeating through all of life. And I would say that, you know, these kinds of things are fuzzy. So what are the radios trying to say? What's coming through them? And I think this is where you have to go inside, because you might be the only one that's been given the information of what it means. So looking outside yourself and asking a bunch of other people might lead you down extremely the wrong path. So there's a point to which you have to say, I'm the only authority, because there is no authority. And what is coming through for me? What is true for me? And I would recommend using a pendulum or meditating, you know, because then you can ask your questions. And I started to realize the other day, and I said this before, it's like, if ETs can telepathically know what we're thinking, they can also send us thoughts. So when you say, I'm going to quiet my mind and I want to know what this 3 hours was about, what was it about? And if you open your mind, you get a thought coming in, that might be them sending you a thought. So you'll often discount it, like, well, I don't know what I'm thinking. You know, it's just my thought came in. It's probably from me. Well, it might not have been from you, you know? And then once you get a thought or get something come through your pendulum, say, I want confirmation. You know, show me a sign that I understood this right. Or you can automatic write or something like that. And the dreams, and be patient with yourself with the dreams. You know, sometimes you can't always turn this on like that, you know. Pauline, do you want to come down? Yeah, and that's the whole mindfulness is like patience, like not over putting so much pressure on yourself to remember to know right away, because it will come, just like Daniel did in his prayer. It's like if you're consistent about like, show me, tell me, I want to see it, it will come. It might take time. Okay.
What is the pendulum thing you're talking about?
So a pendulum can be used to speak.
Well, I know how to use it. Just tell me what I do with the radio, though.
Okay, so you would say something like, were they explaining to me that how excited they were? Yes, were they, you know, and you could start with what Susan does is truth. Like they were talking to me in a language that I understand, but I don't understand while I'm here. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, so you can start fishing for all of these things. The fact that you're getting communication is really great. So that's really cool.
I mean, I was floored because I hadn't heard for so long. And then it was just like, and I tried to do a C5 outside by myself last night, and I actually smelled something really weird, and I thought, oh, there's a Sasquatch out there. I don't know. And there's a voice. But I get it. Anyway, then I use the spectrum, you know, or the decoder, the decoder, yes. And then get the E. I tried all these different ways, but I think you're right about that from your heart, telepathically, not try to ask so many questions verbally. And that's where maybe I can get it, because they started to talk when I had this really wonderful experience emotionally just before they started to talk. So it was like a heart thing. And I'm going, oh my God, they must have sensed that I was like high about this wonderful thing. And I'm going, oh, okay. Then maybe that's what I need to do. Then I would kiss the radio and it would start up again.
Yes. Yes. I've had stuff like that totally happen. Daniel, what is your idea about this? Where are ways that she can look for responses, meaning, etc.?
Yeah, I think in terms of this level of communication, I'll share a kind of insight I had in my practice working with other people in terms of interpreting their signals and intuition. And so one thing to note is that we all have subtle senses, and we all have like clairvoyance, clairaudience, but we have them in different qualities, and they're sometimes active in different ways and things like that. So oftentimes I have a more visual type experience than some people. Some people have a more body-based thing. And so my sessions got like so much better when I took some time and I slowed it down and I started just exploring. I developed actually a little technique that I might actually share in the workshop that tests how is someone experiencing their own inner intuition? Is it through clairvoyance, clairaudience, visual senses, somatic senses? How does their various aspects of their internal anatomy, let's say, respond to intuition coming in? And so I ended up having to do this because in one of the sessions I was working with like a German woman who lived in Mexico and had like this, like a accent I couldn't really hear. And she was not clairvoyant whatsoever and only experienced things in the body. So, but once you build that rapport with the ways that you experience your intuition, then you can start to go, oh, okay, this is making more sense. The reason why I bring this up in relationship to the radio communications, right? So there's some physicalized thing happening, but there's also some intuition happening. And we're not sure if, I have no idea if the ET and HIs have a little device on the other side that's shooting the radios, or they're shooting your heart space, and your heart space is doing something to the aura, and the aura is doing something to the radios. So I know for a fact that you're experiencing intuition no matter what, because that's a human experience. And therefore, increasing your vocabulary and rapport with how your own intuition works will increase your connection with the ETs in whatever way. So that's a little bit of a long answer, but yeah.
Cool, cool. That's so exciting. That's so exciting, Pauline. I'm so excited that that happened. And they can definitely see and hear you. I know that because they react to things that they can see and hear in my life. And I'm like, what? So very cool. Okay, so Stone wanted to ask you a question, Daniel. Here she comes.
Okay, I'd like to know your opinion on, it's a bit to do with stigmata. I used to suffer from night terrors. I now call them dimensional accessing. And when I would come back, I would have either bruises, burns, or like whip marks across my back. I still wake up with fingerprints and things all over me that there's no physical explanation for, but I know that in dreams it would be. So yeah, what's your thoughts on those?
Yeah, so there's a couple of medical conditions I'm aware of. One's called dermographia. One is also, like, there's this bruising. I can't pronounce it. It starts with an E and has a PH in it, and it's sort of like a Latin word. But that's a quality of the skin bruising because of psychosomatic experiences. And this isn't to devalue anything. I just have to put this information onto the table because it comes from the literature. So this is informing my understanding of, because there's like the bruise marks that people receive oftentimes with sort of distressing experiences. And that's relatively actually consistent with the bruising patterns there. The ones that kind of puzzle me are the scratch marks and things like that, or that the actual handprints in those experiences. Like you see like, oh my God, this looks like a handprint in bruises. Now, I'm not sure if, so the experiencers would have to tell me this, but from looking at it as a like a researcher, I go, okay, there's a known psychosomatic cause of bruising. Isn't it amazing that the dream content can express itself like that creature that has like the three fingers, right? Because you see that a lot, like a three-fingered hand bruising someone who has a kind of a abduction type experience. I go, wow, that's amazing that there could be such correspondence, and that correspondence between the dream experience and the physical manifestation is interesting in itself. So that's one of a kind of skeptical-ish approach to that. There are, I mean, it needs more study. That's one of the reasons why I'm talking about it. I bring up the psychosomatic stuff, and then anyone who has an experience, if you go like, I remember actually being touched by a being or whatever, and you know, like that adds information, and we just don't have anything like that amount of data in the literature. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Field Guide to Anomalous Geometry, was because we just need something written down about these things. And then we need to collect more data around that. In general, I would say, I would assume that these marks are and experiences are in some way mediated by the dreaming mind, meaning you're just like I said with abductions or night terrors, even though and sleep paralysis, even though those are very, very, very intense experiences, even though it's very, very hard sometimes to get out of those experiences. Like I'm not kidding anyone in terms of saying they're not intense experiences or sleep paralysis or whatever. I'm not going like, oh, alien abduction is just like sleep paralysis. I go, and it's like, you can get out of it if you want. I go, that takes a lot of work, takes a lot of mindfulness, takes a lot of practice. You can start that right now and have a change right away. It could be miraculous. But I know from my personal experience, it's probably like I suffered for years because of that sort of night terror quality kind of sleep paralysis thing. And it slowly shifts, sort of like how, if you have ever had a level in past, there's grief in the heart that needs to shift. And so applying these techniques of mindfulness, attitude, and intention to these very strong night terror experiences will shift them, but we sort of like, I don't want to discredit anyone's experience by like lying to you and like, it's going to happen right away if you download an app, right? Like, no, it's work, and it's really worthwhile work.
All right, thank you for that. Now, I'm just asking because I have woken up with scratch my that I was tied up to a stone and I was whipped. And my partner said, how did I get that? And I don't know. This is in the early days when I was still analysing what was going on. In another, had my arm onto some hearth rocks that were hot. And when I woke up, there was a big bruise, a big, like a blister on my arm. And there's no way that that could have actually happened to me physically. I wasn't around anything that was like that. I still get them. I still get them. And waking up from a night terror, you know, sleep paralysis, there is a way to do it. I've done it. I regularly have these encounters. And I don't, but it's all psychosomatic because of the experiences that I've had. But I understand where that all that information and science has come from. You know, in the early days, saying that this was trauma-based, putting people into night terrors, I don't agree anymore because of personal experiences. I've had encounters where these beings have come in and shown themselves, letting me know that I'm about to have a night terror encounter, and I will prep my devices, and I have actually caught material on these devices, states, and had communication with these other beings. So, but anyway, thank you for sharing. I appreciate everything that comes up.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think about you often with your orb photographs and things like that. So the one of the hypotheses, so just a comment about the burn quality and the whip quality corresponding to content. When I talked to Dr. Sean about like, help me figure out this sort of hypothesis or whatever, he gave the precedent of a fairly prominent dream researcher who had a dream about falling off his bike and then receiving road rash in the dream. And he assessed this was actually just a dream. He didn't think he had a physical accident, but that he observed that the quality of the mark really did correspond to the content of the dream experience. So I just wanted to add that in the mix, like the body is amazing in and of itself. Now, because I know you are, I literally have thought about your photographs because I worked with them in LightNet and I know them. And I go, okay, when I did a lot of this alien abduction research, I'm like, oh, like the regression hypnosis isn't as solid as we thought. Abduction research isn't as solid as we thought. This body mark stuff might be psychosomatic. I go, but something else is actually really going on. There's some other thing, some other factor that is not explained by psychosomatic. And that is where I sort of really opened up to the notion of light beings or light orbs or something like that. I imagine that they are dream shaman, these light orb, and have the capacity to do dream shaman, like they're dream shamanic masters. That hypothesis was explored actually in the 80s under the Earthlights hypothesis name by a man named Paul Devereaux. And I haven't done enough research about that to talk about it, but I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I mean, this is back to my theory is that there are other dimensions and normally the dimensions don't mix because they're not really supposed to and they're not really allowed quite yet to do that. But they sometimes do. And when they sometimes do, they are actually in our physical world momentarily, and they are causing these things. I mean, we know from the radios that they are piercing into our reality. It could be that everything you're saying is right, that everything in my experience I'm creating. So I'm creating the radios making noise, or I'm creating, I mean, we know we can miraculously like heal our eyes and everything. So we can miraculously damage ourselves as well. You know, we probably do all the time when you fall down, it's you doing that. It's not like you tripped on the rock, right? It's an energetic, everything you see in your reality is an energetic response to your consciousness. So it's not like the psycho, that makes sense as well. But I think that it could make sense too, that there is an interaction happening now between the dimensions as we merge into their dimension completely. And so now it's like this never before been happened time where we're starting to cross over. And Adam talks it about, it's like we're the pioneers, like at the very edge going, oh my gosh, what's over there? What's over there? What's over there? And they're kind of like the same way. They're not really supposed to be messing on this side. And they are, I don't know. I mean, that was his theory that he got. So who knows? I mean, who knows? It's an interesting query, and it's an interesting, and if we knew the answer, we wouldn't be so obsessed with finding the answer. Wouldn't be so obsessed with doing all this research that we're doing. So I love it. I love it. I love it. So we just have a little bit more time left. Daniel, what is on your mind? Like, what do you want to share about your incredible life and all your incredible research with the community and people listening on New Realities and Portal to Ascension, Lightnet? Like, what do you wish people knew about you, or wish people knew about the world or reality as you see it?
I mean, the thing I keep coming back to is this universal quality of dream shamanism. That's the thing that I get so passionate about it, because there is this subtle and insidious quality of the mainstream culture that's sort of disempowering. And so there's this sense of like the alien abduction narratives, replacing, like if we knew about dream shamanism, we wouldn't have believed in alien abduction narratives. And this sense of being disempowered and a victim. I often sometimes contemplate what's happening today in terms of like disclosure narratives. And I'm all for disclosure. I'm all for like disclosure coming up and into the world and like the government opening the doors. But I'm also sort of observing the insidious qualities of that mythology, actually, is sort of wondering, because there is a connection between the alien abduction notion and these sort of crash retrieval narratives. And I go, because I the same people are involved in both, the same sort of research methods or epistemologies are used in both. But it the same quality of feeling like one is a victim is present in alien abduction and with the crash retrieval narratives. The crash retrieval narratives are very more, much more sophisticated, right? There's crashes, there's UFOs, the government has them, there's someone holding back this knowledge, and that we are somehow victims of this evil cabal or deep state or something like that. And I know, I mean, it for me, that's been a sort of a fascination and an obsession. I mean, we've gone through like disclosure watch parties and stuff like that on this channel, just sort of eating up the words from these UAP crash retrieval narrative people. Ultimately, the message I have is, even if those flying saucers are held in Area 51, and even if the government opens up the doors and we see it, we still have to practice mindfulness. We still have to adjust our attitudes, and we still have to be intentional about how we relate to it. And ultimately, we don't have to wait for that disclosure narrative to either implode or move forward or whatever. It's like right here, right now, every single moment, every single day, we have the capacity to build a deeper relationship with ourselves that is beneficial. So, and the reason why I keep coming back to dream shamanism is that is a kind of a universal quality of human cultures. Every single culture, except for those that are Western education, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic, these weird cultures, that's an acronym from social science. Everyone except for our weird cultures, the Western ones, value dreams and thinks the things in them are real and meaningful. And if we were, and they also say that every single person is universally capable of being a dream shaman for themselves. They do have specialized roles, but that's for specialized occasions. It's not like an everyday thing where you have to go to a shaman to interpret your dream. You do dream shamanism in the morning when you talk about your dreams and things like that. So the reason why I'm talking about this in context with disclosure narratives is because, right, we had this whole Arrow report come out last week or whatever. There's so much to be said about that, but it ultimately doesn't matter because every single night you dream, every single morning you have the opportunity to be mindful about that. And every time you interact with someone, you have the opportunity to share what's happening for you in that way. And if we do, right, I know from studying dream shamanic cultures, some are great, some are not so great, some are have problems, some don't. But ultimately, working with dreams in this way leads to technical creativity. And we see that in Western history. In the Western history of science and philosophy and religion and politics, dreams and interactions with entities through dreams have really moved that all forward. So if we really did care about free technology, we honestly should spend less time thinking about what bureaucrats are doing and more time just connecting with the entities in our dreams who have a proven history that you can look through in like obvious documentation through history, that they inspire technical creativity and give us technology through our dreams. That's literally and truly like very well documented. We don't have to wait for government disclosure to happen to understand that beings who may actually look like ETs and be ETs communicates through us through dreams. I'm just passionate about that fact. And that all really comes down to just being mindful and intentional and working with your attitudes about that. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. I really appreciate how empowering you are. And I love that about you. And I love that about LightNet is that anyone can do this. And you have the power to access information beyond your mind right there in your dreams. And you have the power to know how to dream better and know how to interpret your dreams and know how to incubate your dreams and restart your dreams and all these cool things. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today. I really appreciate it, Daniel. So I just want to share our calendar, starseedacademy.org, if you haven't been to our new website. So Adham is doing breakthrough coaching for season 8. You can go for $44 or just become a member. Community call is free. So if you want to go to lightnet.org/connection, you can sign up. And this is our chance to really bring experiencers together to talk and meet each other in small groups of three in breakout rooms. So if you haven't done that, it's delightful. It's on the 18th from 4 to 5 on Monday. So we're changing up the times. Also, spoon bending. Again, you can sign up for just once, or you can become a member for $144 and do it all year long. This is going to be great. We're going to have people here in Sedona doing it with everybody online. And Susan is going to be doing her color therapy. So she's doing a starseed series, which is awesome. And she's showing us different principles each month. And this month it's color therapy. So how to influence your mood, sensuality, healing, and more using colors in your life. And then Daniel's going to be back with us on the 28th on Thursday, 6:30 at night, to do this masterclass again for members. Or you can just sign up for this particular masterclass. And then one of Daniel's and my favorite people, Dan Winters, is coming on. He is incredible fractal physicist. And he's also very attuned to alien energies of all sorts. So he's going to be really talking about stargates and everything else. So we look forward to seeing you there. And thanks for joining us again. I have a shout out to Alan from New Realities, who I saw in the chat. We love you, Alan, so much. It was great to run around with him during the conference. So thank you so much, Daniel. Thanks again for joining us today. And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Portal to Ascension Radio. Be sure to visit portaltoascension.org to access our extensive library of presentations and sign up for exclusive content. And connect with us on Instagram at Portal to Ascension. Now is the time that we've been waiting for, and we exist to assist in laying the foundation for a new world that works for the upliftment for all of humanity. Until next time, continue the quest, push the boundaries of your understanding, and we will all ascend to greater heights.